Welcome to Word Warren. We're going to talk about books.
Yay, books.
The books. Yay, books.
I'm your host, Sarah, and we have Hannah on the controls.
As always, doing the beep boops.
Beep boops. And our guest is Joe.
Hello.
Hi, Joe.
Hi, Joe.
Hello.
It's so good to have you here. We're going to talk about Tolkien.
And fantasy.
And fantasy. And fantasy. Yeah. So if you want more information about what makes a book fantasy, you can listen to our very first episode that we ever recorded.
The very, very first one. Word Warren. Word Warren. Season one. Episode one. Mm-hmm. I won't be linking that, but you can find it on our show page.
Really in depth about epic fantasy, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we went over a couple of different ones, epic fantasy and urban fantasy mostly, yeah. But
we talked a lot about fantasy. We talked about fantasy last season too.
That's true.
We always come back to fantasy.
Exactly. Yeah. We'll start with some Tolkien, because I wrote a little note, because basically, like, the popularity of his novels, The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, basically led to, like, a resurgence in the popularity of fantasy, because obviously there had been previous fantasy novels, but it became really popular, and he shaped largely modern fantasy, especially epic fantasy. So he's often identified as the father of modern fantasy, or more precisely, epic fantasy.
Epic fantasy.
So he wrote The Hobbit, was published in 1937, and fun fact, it has never been out of print since then.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Huh. I love that.
Yeah.
I know we talked about it in our fantasy episode, how fantasy at one point in time was very much seen as a children's genre.
Yeah.
Which is why The Hobbit was initially published as a children's book. Yeah. It's not a children's book. No. Get out of here.
But he did write it because his son kept contradicting him on the details. He's like, last time you said this guy's cloak was this color and now it's blue. Like, and this guy's beard was yellow and now it's brown. What's the deal, Dad? And so he's like, fine, I'll just go write it all down.
That's amazing. Children.
Oh, Christopher.
Amazing.
I mean, so good. Thank you, Christopher Tolkien, for making.
I think it was Christopher. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah. I know he had a total of like four kids or something.
I think so.
But I think Christopher's the most well known because he's the one who's also been publishing a lot of his works posthumously and stuff.
He finished, like the Silmarillion whatever. I think he passed away a couple years ago.
Mm.
Aw. Yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah.
Oh, way to start the episode off on a bummer. But it's interesting to me that Tolkien is like this driving force in what made fantasy, I don't want to say mainstream, but took it from the realm of only children's books into something that
was like widely accessible.
Yeah. Something that people thought was actual good literature versus just like, that's just children's things.
Fairy tales and hogwash.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think that's pretty cool. Yes, yeah. Because it also wore, it was nominated for the Carnegie Medal, which is like annually they just recognize somebody who's outstanding, like new English language book for children's and young adults. So he won that Carnegie Medal and was also, or no, he was nominated. Sorry, he didn't win that one. But he did win the New York Herald Tribune, though.
I'm gonna repurpose my "you tried" bronze medal graphic that I made for Game Cabinet and just stick it on this here.
You tried. but and it's like one of the best-selling novels in modern day. It's sold over 100 million copies. So
I think for a while it was like the second best-selling book behind the Bible.
Right.
Forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wizards.
Dragons.
In both of them.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oftentimes the same wizard.
Fighting against forces of evil. Mm-hmm. It's basically the Bible. That's what I'm saying. The parallels are all there.
So I have...
I'll avoid that topic.
I'm just going to skip right over that comment.
Where's Justin when I need him?
He did publish at least one other book before, but then he, in 1954, he published The Fellowship of the Rings, which is the first in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, as a direct sequel The Hobbit.
So was The Hobbit his first book, or was it his second?
As far as I can tell, it was his first published book was The Hobbit, yeah.
And then he published another book in between.
In between, yeah. It was one called Farmer Giles of Ham. which was a comedic medieval fable about the story describes encounters between Giles and a wily dragon named Chrysophilax and how Giles managed to use these, I don't know. Oh, God, my notes are weird. But anyway, to rise from humble beginnings to rival the king of the land. Apparently, he tricks the dragon into...
Well, now I want to read that. What?
Sounds pretty good.
That right? Sounds really good. Right? Oh, man. Now they should just publish that as, like, Tolkien universe stuff, mm-hmm. where it's just...
Right, mm-hmm. right. And then, yeah. And so, obviously, like, the Fellowship of the Ring, the Two Towers, and the Return of the King, they were all, like... as a sequel to The Hobbit, but it just basically, he just created like the world of the Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. after that. Like, he wrote so extensively on all of that topic that it's just like,
building is mm-hmm.
phenomenal.
It's so crazy. I mean, he made up a language,
mm-hmm.
many languages,
several languages. Actually, yeah,
like, people don't do that anymore,
right?
He also, like, in some of like the appendices and everything, he wrote like text that was on purpose, like there's no translation for it. He's like, oh yeah, we don't know what this says. Like, that's sorry guys.
Bananas. I love that.
Or so it's like an ancient inscription from like long before the like, Lord of the Rings and everything.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I love that stuff so much. He's like, nobody knows what this says. You know what it says. Tell us what it says. Talking.
Obviously, those were like, I went through a bunch of and wrote down a bunch of books that he also published. Although, speaking of like creating the languages, I did like it when I was reading some of this stuff about how he created a couple
Holy
of languages.
Crap, because how many notes do you I have know. In there?
He wow, oh man, he wrote.
Anyway. I mean, it looks like a Tolkien book. It does. That looks like. It's just...
But anyway, so he constructed several languages, but like he was a professional like linguist, I think, of yep. some sort, and yeah. so and he specialized in ancient Germanic languages, especially like Old English. But one of the quotes that I found was that when he described finding a book of Finnish grammar, he said, like, it was like discovering a complete wine cellar filled with bottles of an amazing wine of a kind and flavor never tasted before. He was just like so enamored of the Finnish language. He even wrote a Finnish fairy tale. Like,
I love that.
Because, that's so poetic. Yeah. I love like, it. And true to form.
Right. True to form. Absolutely. Yeah. I believe that. And I believe that he said that out loud.
Yeah.
To his wife, probably.
To his wife. In one go. He didn't even have to think about it or edit it. That just came out of his mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
yep.
Just vomited poetry into the world.
Yep. Same as The Hobbit, The Lord of the Rings is like one of the most best-selling novels. Between the three of them, over 150 million copies have been sold. So, wow. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's a lot.
That's a lot of books.
Yeah.
That's a lot of books.
Mm-hmm. And he had initially intended it to be published as like one volume. Yes. But the publishers wanted it to be spread out. So he just,
Thank God.
He actually hated the titles because he felt like it gave too much away. Because like the third one's called Return of the King. He goes, well, cool. You spoiled the ending.
Spoiled the ending.
But they were like, listen, nobody's going to buy a 1,000-page book. Got to split it up somehow.
Little did they know. Yeah.
And he's like, fine. There's two books in each one.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Yeah.
Because it like splits like book one and book two of each.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't imagine them being published in a single, like, it would be like, it would.
I have a copy of it. That's the whole thing in one. It's only about like 2.5 inches big.
What did they print it in? Like 0.5 font?
No, it's perfectly readable.
Oh my gosh.
I had to read it for, I took a college class on it and we read about 100 pages a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then every 350 pages or so, we had to write like an essay based on like certain themes or like the mythology or like just, it was phenomenal class. I loved it so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is why we invited Joe onto the podcast today because we were like, you know more about Tolkien than like literally any of us.
I know too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, can you really know too much about a topic that you're passionate
Absolutely
about?
Absolutely not.
No. But
if it makes you happy, if it makes your heart happy, it's a good thing to learn about.
I've worn the One Ring around my neck since I was 14.
Nice. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Amazing.
Amazing.
I love that so much.
So originally in 1954, that's when they published The Fellowship. And then 1968 was the first time they actually published like all three books in one, which is the way he wanted it to be published. But and yeah, if you want a because we have an illustrated one downstairs too that's really fancy.
Mm-hmm.
That's and with his own drawings and stuff like that too, because he was also an illustrator.
What couldn't he do?
Right? Everything. He wrote poetry, he wrote essays and stuff, because like
he had a great great back and forth friendship with C.S. Lewis.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My favorite bit on that, like C.S. Lewis and their relationship. C.S. Lewis wrote like the professor from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe as Tolkien. Yeah. Right, and Cedric Diggory made him a bigger part of the lore, and so Tolkien did the same thing with C.S. Lewis and just made him
Treebeard.
Yeah,
I love that.
He's like,
so
oh, John, I made you this wonderful character, this like this wise old professor that's just like you. He's like, nice, Clive. I made you a walking old tree that no one likes and talks too much.
You're just a tree, man.
I'm sorry, what?
He's a very important character.
He's great. I love him. I love Treebeard dearly.
I wish that the movies had more about the Ents in them.
Mm-hmm.
So I love Ents so much.
Yeah, the Last March of the Ents is one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
And in, I think the 90s, I think, Christopher Lee, of all people, made... because he was like a heavy metal guy, rock and roll, whatever. Yeah. He did a rendition of that poem to like heavy metal.
Nice.
I like, so there's a acapella, well, they're not completely acapella, but there's a group I listen to on YouTube called Calme de Profundis.
I listen to them too.
Their March of the Ents one.
Phenomenal.
Chills. Up your spine chills.
Yep.
Love that so much.
I like their version of Beren and Luthien.
Yeah.
And the Misty Mountains, because they sing every single
verse.
The
Misty Mountain ones is so good.
So good.
Also the Song of Durin.
Yep.
The whole one. They do the whole thing.
Very dwarven. I love it.
Very dwarven. I mean, everything that I've heard from them that's Lord of the Rings based is just so good.
Very good.
So good.
Nice.
I'm gonna link them.
Yeah, we should.
On our YouTube video.
They deserve it.
Because speaking of music and his poems and stuff, there was also a book published in 1967 that was called The Road Goes Ever On. It's literally a song cycle, so it's published as sheet music with a recording of like his poems put to music.
I love that so much.
Which is pretty rare, because like he wrote a lot of like lyrics, a lot of like the poems and songs and stuff don't have like official like music for
right.
it.
Yeah.
Which is why I really enjoyed like in the Hobbit movies, you know, take them if they will, you know.
Yeah.
But they took a lot of those poems and like gave them like a new life.
Because
you listen to like older recordings of it that people made, like fans made, and they're completely different. So it's up to like interpretation, and it's beautiful.
I love how, because they are poems that don't have music to them, like it is up to interpretation, but then you hear that one person that covers it and you're like, no, that's how it's supposed to, like everybody's just like, that's how it's supposed to be.
That's the one.
Like, you find me somebody who doesn't agree that Misty Mountains is exactly how it's sung in the Hobbit.
Peter Hollins does a lot of really cool covers.
Peter Hollins does some really amazing covers of those too. I have way too much Lord of the Rings music on my YouTube playlist. Lindsay Sterling did a really nice one too. A very beautiful instrumental cover of a couple of them.
That's cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
So other works by Tolkien that he published. There was The Adventures of Tom Bombadil.
Yep.
Which is a collection of poetry.
Tom Bombadil.
I know Tom Bombadil.
Did you know he's a magic card now?
He's a magic card now. Because they've got the Lord of the Rings set coming out. Yeah,
he was one of the promo cards, and his like card type, he's all five colors. And
of course he is.
I don't remember what his official typing is, but it's like legendary creature, and his like tribal type, I guess, is God. because it's so unknown what he is, so they're like, what do we do? Like, what do we label him as?
He's Tom Bombadil.
I think he's God, storyteller, I think. I don't remember. He's
amazing.
One of the biggest mysteries of Tolkien, and I hope the answer never comes.
I hope it never comes either. Right? Like, I like Tom Bombadil just being
there.
And his wife, Goldberry, they're so cute.
They're so cute.
So it was like a book that has like 16 poems in it. Only two of them were even about Tom Bombadil. So I don't know. It just seemed weird to me that they titled the book.
But he's a storyteller, right? So like, maybe Tom Bombadil's telling the
maybe
poems.
Maybe those are all his poems, actually.
Tom Bombadil's poems.
Yeah. I mean, Tolkien goes on tangents sometimes.
Yeah.
So like, there's a part in, I think, Fellowship of the Ring, where the point of view shifts from the hobbits as they're running away from the Nazgul to a fox. And it's like a quick one-sentence thing, and the fox is like, that's weird. I wonder what's going on with that. And then it like leaves his perspective as he's running away and is like, but the fox never found out anything. And then it cuts back to the hobbit. So I'm like, that is absolutely wonderful.
I don't remember that at all, but that's amazing.
I appreciate that the editor, whoever was in charge of editing Tolkien's book, was just like, no, that can stay.
That's fine. That's absolutely fine.
That's so good.
Because normally an editor would read something like that and be like, hey, bud, get rid of that.
Get rid of that.
That makes no sense. But no, they're just like, no. Yeah. You know what you're doing, man.
So good.
Oh, that's so good. So then in 1964, there was a book called Tree and Leaf, which just had it had two works in it. One was an essay called On Fairy Stories, and then a short story called Leaf by Niggle, which was originally published in the Dublin Review in 1945. So it was just like a short story that he reprinted with his essay on fairy stories.
Huh, neat.
Mm-hmm. Then in 1966 was the anthology The Tolkien Reader, which compiled basically a bunch of previously published works all in one big anthology. So like some poems and stories that he had published before, plus those other three books are also included in The Tolkien Reader, like Tree and Leaf and The Adventures of Tom Bombadil. And then two original works were Tolkien's Magic Ring and then a publisher's note that were added to it when it was published.
Oh, cool.
And some of these I've never even heard of. There's a book called Smith of Wootton Major, which is like a novella, which was supposed to be an introduction to George MacDonald's fairy story, The Golden Key. Okay. But Tolkien got so into it that he just wrote a novella instead and published it.
On brand.
Right.
That's the most Tolkien thing I've ever heard. Of course he did.
Yeah.
So, and it's a fairy story. Like, it was supposed to just be like the introduction. It was just supposed to be like an explanation of the meaning of what fairy is or whatever. But it ended up being a novella about a cook and his cake.
Hey, JR, we need you to write a 1,000-word intro to this book. Did you mean 1,000 pages?
Yes, that's exactly what happened.
I did some light writing.
You did some very light writing. I only stayed up 3 days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there was a book called Bilbo's Last Song.
I have that book.
Okay, yeah. It was its original publication was in Dutch in 1973. And then it got published in English, but it was only as a poster. Yeah, with an illustration by him and then the story. And then eventually in 1990, it got published as a picture book. So I don't know. It doesn't say what it is. It's not like, it's like a poem or a story. I don't know. Like it just was published on a poster.
I've glanced through it just to look at the pictures.
Yeah.
I believe it's meant to be like a little send off for Bilbo because Bilbo was the one that started the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like a nice little like.
Bravest little hobbit of them all.
Abs. Right. God bless Leonard. Oh, what a song. Because he sings a little bit of it in The Lord of the Rings when he walks off to Rivendell.
Oh.
He's like, the road goes ever on and
okay.
on. Okay. It's that
I
poem.
Love that
okay.
song.
Okay. Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. I thought it was a fun little tidbit because apparently, so his publishers hired a woman named Margaret Joy Hill to be his secretary that would handle all his fan mail and stuff. And so as a thank you for all of the work that she did for him over the years, he actually gifted her the copyrights to that poem.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, that's so
yeah.
cool.
Yeah. I thought that was nice.
He's like, I've got the best selling books ever. You can have this little one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only God can compete with me. You're gonna sit there and tell me that I'm wrong.
So that would be everything that was ever published like before Tolkien's passing. So he died in 1973. So then in 1976, Christopher Tolkien edited the letters, the Father Christmas letters, and released those, which were a bunch of letters that that Tolkien wrote to his children from Father Christmas.
Aww.
Like,
oh, that's cute.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Adorable. And so they just collected those all together and printed them. And then in 1977, The Silmarillion, which was a collection of myths and stories that all the other stuff,
like all the other
things. Unfinished tales and stuff like that. Yeah,
I've never read the Silmarillion. I've tried. It's a lot.
It looks like a lot.
It looks like a lot. Yeah.
I get a lot of just like spark notes stuff that I'm just like, what was that story about? Oh, look, that's what it was about. Okay.
There's actually a part in, you guys know Ready Player One?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He wrote a sequel called Ready Player Two. I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
Probably did. Well, I'm talking to a bookseller. What am I doing?
I mean, it's fine.
Okay. So I was really excited for this book. Mm-hmm. It was okay. It was fine. Okay. So it was like the same thing in the Oasis, whatever, and different themes. There was a whole planet based off of like Prince, the musician.
Nice.
And they had to fight 7 different iterations of Prince, which was very cool. But there's one part where they just go deep diving headfirst into just Silmarillion lore. And they like have to go through and solve puzzles and whatever. And I'm like, you're just name dropping all these like deep Tolkien lore names. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and I love Tolkien and I'm bored. I get it. This is really cool.
Right.
Not going to be in the movie as well.
No.
Absolutely not.
I mean, I could see like for the movie, them doing something along the lines of like a little 5-minute quiz or something, and then like fading out to black and then like fading back in like very clearly like 4 hours later kind of thing. And
this was just like a substantial part of the ending was, and I'm just like, why are Baron and Luthien here? What are we doing?
I mean, we're paying homage to Tolkien and his writing style, which is just lengthy.
Yes.
I haven't read Ready Player Two yet.
It's not a bad read.
Yeah.
It's kind of cute. It's fun. I haven't read it in a while, but...
Fair. I don't know.
I'd recommend it, though.
Okay.
I'd recommend it, though.
I remember when it came out, and I was like, I should read that. And then I just went, but I have so much other stuff to read.
Yeah. That's the truth. Yeah. And so then, basically, after that, Christopher Tolkien also continued to publish and edit works based on his notes and stuff like that. So there was, like, The Children of Húrin. I'm probably going to mispronounce all these ones. It was...
I'll help you.
Baron and Luthien.
Luthien, yep.
Okay.
That's, they're mentioned in Fellowship of the Ring. They're okay. Like, because it's the same thing as Aragorn and Arwen. There's a mortal man and an elf maiden, and they like fall in love. And
their love story is so sad and so beautiful.
So good.
And I love it so much.
Yeah, that little, I think it's a deleted scene, but it's in the extended version of the movies where Aragorn is singing like the song in Elvish, and Frodo, who knows Elvish because he's very smart, is like, who is she? And he tells a little bit about her, and then he goes, what happened? And Aragorn is like, she died.
Yeah.
And he just looks so sad because he's thinking about Arwen. And I'm like, right. Yeah, it's,
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I love the parallels. It's perfect.
And then the Fall of Gondolin.
Fall of Gondolin.
Which I would love to see in a movie.
There's speaking of YouTube covers, there's a lady I listen to on YouTube. I think her username is like Uriel or something like that. It's like E-U-Y-E-R-E-L-L or something like that. And she does a cover of Beren and Luthien. Wow. And it makes me sob. It's so, she has like this beautiful, like enchanting voice, and it's just heartbreaking.
You're gonna have to show me that.
I'll send you that. I'll send you that song.
Before we go into adaptations, Tolkien also did a translation of Beowulf.
I was waiting for you to say that. I was like, if you don't say it, I'm going to.
Yeah.
Isn't it like widely regarded as like the best one, or one of the like the could best be, and most accurate ones?
Mm-hmm. The part, because he finished that translation in 1923, and then he just put it away on a shelf and never published it until his kid published it, I think, in 2014. Mm-hmm. Then it finally got
published. I like to imagine that he was just like, all of these translations suck. And he's like a linguist. Right. And so he just like translates it for himself so that he can enjoy Beowulf.
Right.
And then he's
nice.
And then he's like, okay, cool. Now I've read it how it should be read. And then he just puts it away.
He just put it away. Never.
There's actually a story that one of his former students said, some interview after Tolkien passed, where he was like in the first day of class at Oxford, where Tolkien taught for many years. Tolkien wasn't there. And they're like, this is weird. Like, where is he? And then Tolkien like throws the doors open and then just starts shouting the first like 50 lines of Beowulf in Old English as like an introductory to the course. And he's like, this is overwhelming. I love it. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice.
Amazing. Oh, yeah.
adaptations. So in 1978, there was a Lord of the Rings adaptation by Tolkien Enterprises, directed by Ralph Bakshi.
Yep.
And a screenplay by Peter S. Beagle that was a rotoscoping, which I'd never heard of the term rotoscoping before.
Enlighten us on the term rotoscoping.
It's an animation technique that animators use. They trace over motion picture footage frame by frame just to create like a more realistic action.
I've heard rotoscoping before, but I don't like, care I enough know. About the film industry.
It was pretty common in like early like 2D Disney movies and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because they show like the test footage of that woman that they used for Aurora.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
I love that adaptation.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Really?
So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I believe Alan Lee and John Howe like did drawings for it.
Oh, wow.
I think. Because that was about the time where they were just doing everything.
I bet it's gorgeous.
It's very fun.
I bet it's
fun. They all look very silly. Aragorn is not wearing pants. He wears like a long Star Trek skirt, kind of.
Oh, okay.
But he has like a belt.
Like a tunic.
Yeah.
Like a long tunic.
But it like stops mid-thigh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Delightful.
Legolas looks like an angel. Gimli, I don't think he has any lines. Boromir looks like a Viking.
Sure.
As he should.
Merry and Pippin look like the same person. But it has...
Aren't they just the same person?
Well, yes and no. At the beginning, yes.
I know.
But it does include a scene of one of my favorite Tolkien bits of Saruman of Many Colors. Do you know what that is?
No.
So Saruman is a wizard, right? He's Saruman the White, and there's five colors of wizards. There's Radagast the Brown, Gandalf the Gray, Saruman the White, and then Alatar and Palindo the Blue. And we don't know a whole lot about them, but that doesn't matter right now. But Saruman wanted to take the ring for himself, right? And there's a scene where they didn't include it in the Jackson movies, but where they're talking about like, oh, we should join Sauron and whatever, like Gandalf and Saruman are talking, and Gandalf says, you're dumb. Why are you? No, absolutely not. Like, this won't work.
Well, sit back down.
But it's a lot like how in Lothlorien, where we were shown what Galadriel would look like if she became...
Okay,
if she had the ring, she'd become the Storm Queen. Saruman becomes Saruman of Many Colors instead of Saruman the White. So he has a big, like, rainbow prism-esque, like, magical robe. It's very cool.
So he becomes like David Bowie. Is what I'm hearing.
Except angry and probably can't sing as well.
Angry and can't sing as well. Okay.
Yeah, but I remember like the visuals in my head because he looks so cool. And
that sounds really neat.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Oh. I'm crossing my fingers. There's a magic card for him because Saruman of Many Colors, a 5-color card. It makes sense.
Amazing.
But they're
yeah.
not going to do it. But who knows?
I mean, they might surprise us.
I would cry. I would legitimately cry. I'd fall to my knees in the Target parking lot.
We know that you're going to spend like a year's worth of pay on that set. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're aware. I looked at the prices on that set and I was like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm. I'm getting a collector box, a set box. 3 of the commander decks, and then I think Torin and I are going halvesies on a draft box, so we can like do a draft like with our friends.
My thoughts and prayers to your wallet.
Thank you. Yes. I also just bought a computer, so
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
It's fine. It's fine.
I mean, it's you're making the decisions yourself, but
it's fine.
It's fine. Everything is fine. The room's not on fire.
Everything in moderation, right?
It could be drugs.
It could be. Yes.
It could be. Could be drugs.
I'm not spending a lot of money, I promise.
Hi, Joe's mom. We're not a bad influence.
No. Let's see. In 77, there was an animated TV musical for The Hobbit by Rankin Bass.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1980, they produced an animated TV film for The Return of the King.
Yeah, they just skipped Fellowship in
they
Two Towers.
They just skipped everything.
Because apparently the rotoscope one that we talked about, it didn't cover the whole of the Lord of the Rings
ended,
either.
Like right after that Battle of Helm's Deep, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't the whole thing, and I was always disappointed. And I was like, where's the next one? And they're like, there's not one. And I was very sad.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
And then the next time they did it, they were like, oh, and this is just the ending.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thanks. Yep. What happened in the beginning?
Yep.
In the beginning, there was Gandalf.
And then all the way
I'm going to keep making those jokes forever.
Next one.
I almost went on like a 20-minute tangent about the creation myth of Middle-earth, but I will not. It has to do with music. It's very cool.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That sounds fun.
Yeah.
So then in 2001, New Line Cinema released the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Well, the first in the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Which the was Fellowship. Amazing. Wait. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I was two. Yeah. I'm sorry. So sorry.
What year was that?
2001.
2001.
Okay.
Yeah. I was a 90s kid for six months.
Oh my God.
Oh my.
But it still
counts. I saw that in theaters.
I saw that
I'm jealous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
By myself.
That's awesome. I wish I got
that chance. I went to go with my friends, but like, I didn't have to have my parents bring me is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I'm trying to do the math. I was 15. I was a freshman in high school.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, and then in 2012, they... 2000? Why didn't you stop saying 2000 and then start saying 20?
Well, there was the whole...
It's because...
of the world's going to end, so 2012 was very popular.
Well, and 20... 01 doesn't work. You,
right.
2001. Yeah. It's when you get to the double digits, so it's 2010.
Right, okay.
It goes 2009, and then 2010.
And then 2010, okay. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah. I actually just saw a TikTok about that the other day, too. That's why it made me think of that. I'm like, when do I stop saying 2000 and start saying 2022? Like, anyway.
I mix them liberally. At all times. Sometimes I'm like 2010, and sometimes I'm like 2010, and sometimes I'm like 10. Figure it out.
You figure out what 10 I'm talking about. Okay, then they started releasing The Hobbit, and it was also a trilogy of movies. So they turned a 200 or 300 page book into three movies.
Should have been two movies.
It should have been two movies. Yeah. I agree. I mean,
a lot of it had to do with like the studio and Warner Brothers just trying to like milk money out of it.
Yeah,
because they added a lot of unnecessary stuff, like the love triangle garbage, and because Evangeline Lilly, who played Tariel, she did a great job. Mm-hmm. I thought that adding her as a character was fine, you know, because it's an adaptation. But like, she signed on with, and she's like, "I'm not going to be part of a love triangle, right?" And they're like, "Absolutely not." Peter like gave his Peter like yes, you're not, and then you know this
of course.
I won't say his name, but the studio.
Those guys
were like, no, we gotta, she's a girl. She has to be in love with somebody.
There has to be romance
in a kid's book.
Stupid.
Yeah.
So dumb.
Did you guys know I was in a play of The Hobbit?
Oh, no. Really?
Yeah. The Academy of Children's Theater did that in January of 2015. I was Gollum.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of all the characters to be, I feel like Gollum would be the one that I would have the most fun doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't have to wear shoes.
Nice.
I had like these ratty gray clothes. I had a cloak. And I actually met one of my best friends there. She did all my makeup, like on my face, my neck, my arms, and my legs. Took like 30 minutes every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All for a 10-minute scene, which was, you know, just the riddle scene. But like, everyone I talked to, like after the show, was like, dang, that was the best part.
Nice.
Like, thank you. This is my life's work. Because I like...
This is my entire personality at this point in my life.
Do you want me to do his voice?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Glenn.
Yes!
Oh, God.
Glenn's it. They stole it from us.
There you go.
Oh, that is so good!
Yeah, at the time, I was doing it, like, so often, and I actually drank... the same thing that Andy Serkis drank. They called it Gollum juice.
Oh, wow.
And it was like a honey, lavender, lemon, ginger.
Oh, just to keep tea. You from shredding your throat.
Oh, yeah. And I was drinking like four of those a day. My mom was clutch. Thanks, Mom. but I was drinking like two or three thermoses of those like every day. And I was so good. It was awesome. One of the best times
of
my life.
Amazing.
Nice.
I had to do something similar, not with Gollum, obviously, because I have never played Gollum, but when I was in theater, I had to do like, and I cannot do it, so I'm not going to at all anymore. But my director had me do like basically like a Fran Drescher voice, like the yep. really nasally, high-pitched, like, whine voice.
Yeah, yeah.
That wrecked my throat, yeah. Dude. I drank so much hot tea. Mm-hmm. Like, I was just, I just had like a thermos backstage all the time. And every time I got off stage, I was just like,
yeah, there was one time we did like 3 or 4 weekends.
Wow.
Of this, of, nice. Of a Friday night show, Sunday afternoon show, or Saturday afternoon show, and then a Saturday night show. And then we also did like shows for kids that came on like field trips, and we did parent shows, and
yeah,
I did like 20 performances of this thing.
That's
a month.
Amazing.
It was so much fun. Wow. But they would like lube up my, so I had like a bald cap on, and they would like oil up yarn to look like my hair.
Yeah.
And they would do it before every performance, but one weekend they didn't do it before the night show. So it was like really wispy, and I was doing my like,
oh no,
and a strand went into my mouth.
Oh no.
And like tickled the back of my throat, and I almost threw up. So I just turned it into this rancid coughing fit and like slapped the ground, because I had like a little fish as well, and I was like slapping the ground, whatever, and like coughing while Bilbo was talking, and then I was like, "Girl, I'm precious." And he like died. It was so funny. Yeah. And I did a lot of shows in theater when I was younger, and the best compliment I ever got was from the guy who played Bilbo, my friend John. And he, after the intermission, he came up to me and he goes, "Dude, I looked into your eyes and I didn't see you. I was scared. Like, you were going to eat me." And I was like, "I still might." Yeah, it was
the
wonderful.
Option is always on the table.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
That's amazing. Oh, that's so cool.
That's so cool. And then 2017, Amazon acquired the global television rights to Lord of the Rings, and they're doing a series set before the Fellowship.
Long time ago. Yeah, long long before.
Yeah, because nope, I lost it. Galadriel, that's her name.
Galadriel
is very young.
Yep, Elrond is very young.
Yep.
Okay,
I have not watched the show.
I loved it, honestly. Yeah.
I don't give Daddy Bezos any money.
Fair.
So I can't watch it.
Yeah. I give him less money because I'm a student. So
Yeah. I'm waiting for Hal to get back, get started going back to school, so I can be like, "Hal, sign up for a student Amazon account." So I can watch Critical Role.
Yes. Me and a couple of friends would like dissect the episodes every week, and like there's a scene. Because it takes place a long time ago, before Mordor is like a devastated wasteland. Yeah. Like, and there's like people living there. And in the background of that, like episode 2 or something. Spoilers for Rings of Power, by the way, if anyone cares.
It's been out for a while now, guys. Spoiler alert. Okay. But continue.
But in the background, you can see a mountain, right? And so me and my friends were like, is that Mount Doom? Are we in Mordor right now? Because there's like mountains all around. And then in the final episode, like there's a whole sequence of events going on. It's a very great finale. It's awesome. And this whole devastation plays out, and they activate the volcano using like some mechanism of ancient. It makes more sense in the show. But yeah, it's just Mount Doom.
That's
and it's
phenomenal.
So
that's phenomenal.
So, yeah. And I was like, I knew it. I'm so happy. I'm so proud of myself. Yeah. It's awesome.
Nice. Very nice.
So nice.
That's cool. All right.
Now I'm going to have to watch it.
You should. They do a great job. Young Elrond alone is worth it. He's my favorite character.
Yeah.
I mean, Elrond in general is pretty solid character.
My sister had a lot of complaints because in the show, he has short hair. And in the movies, Hugo Weaving has very long hair. And she's like, "Well, he has a stupid haircut." And I'm like, he's been alive for thousands of years. You change your hair like every year?
Listen, maybe? He's young and going through a rebellious elf phase.
Exactly.
And he wants to wear his hair short.
Exactly.
Like, he's going to be very distinguished when he grows up. Leave him alone.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm like, of all the things to complain about, like, come on.
I mean, fans love Hugo Weaving.
That's true. He is wonderful. So, and I'm very glad he came back for the Hobbit movies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, I really enjoyed the Hobbit movies a whole heck of a lot. I do agree that 3 was a little excessive, but I still really enjoyed all 3 of them. Like,
I watched all 3 of them in one day last July.
Nice.
Because I was sick, and so my girlfriend and I didn't have anything to do, so we just stayed at home and watched all 3 of them. And before that, we'd watched Lord of the Rings and everything, and we only watched the extended ones.
Yeah.
And I kept pausing it to, like, explain things or, like, behind-the-scenes things. She's like, this is the greatest way to watch any movie, like, because you're answering questions I didn't know I had, and I have just a deeper and greater understanding, and my viewing experience is enlightened.
And, and see, all of my stuff that I paused the movie for is, like, back behind the scenes stuff that I'm like, oh, during this scene, Sam steps on a piece of glass and cuts his foot open, and they actually had to, like...
Did you know Aragorn broke his toe?
Did you know Aragorn broke his... Do you know that scene where he batted the knife away was actually just a his real mad knife. Sword skills batting the knife away because it wasn't supposed to be thrown at him? Hey, did you see that horse? Dang. He actually adopted that
And
horse.
Then he bought Arwen's horse
And then
her.
He bought Arwen's Aww. Horse for her. Yeah, he loved his horse so much that he actually bought the so horse much. That he used.
I love that so much.
Now, so every good. Time I see Bill in the movies, I'm just like, Bill.
It was Brego.
Oh, it was Brego?
Yeah, Bill was the pony. Brego, oh, that's right. Brego was his horse.
Yep.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting Bill was a pony. I just remember, bye bye, Bill.
Poor old Bill.
He made it, though.
He did. Back. He did.
Yeah.
Bill made it back to the Shire.
Very nice.
He's a good pony. He knows the way home.
Yeah. He has a magic card too. They were like in
of
the
course, of course, he
honestly,
does.
Right? In like the first look, the guy who was like doing the introduction was like, basically, if they're a named character, they have a card. And then he kept talking, whatever, and he goes, even Bill the Pony. I shouldn't have said that. He's like, because you know he has to like show off some cards and talk a bit. He said too much, but Bill the Pony has a card, and I'm very excited for it.
That's so nice.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. It makes me think of Robert Jordan. Sorry, because I mean, no, when I first picked up the book, because the like quote on the front of the book was like, the world that Tolkien started, you know, or created, brought to life by Robert Jordan or whatever. And I started reading it and I was like, this is absolutely nothing like The Rings, like at all, but I still read it because it was good. And there's a horse in that story where they leave their hometown because they have to go on mm-hmm. a quest or whatever. It's Bella the horse, and she just plods along through every single book. She's there all the time. Aww. And she's got plot armor.
I mean, Tolkien really is credited with making modern fantasy mm-hmm. writing what it is. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really, yes, mm-hmm. all fantasy stories right, are yeah. just the world that Tolkien started.
Yeah.
You had elves and dwarves and dragons and sword fights yep. and mm-hmm. orcs and everything. A lot of it wouldn't be, I don't think, nearly as popular without Tolkien mm-hmm. having actually created right. stuff like that. And right. no, it's not all the same world that Tolkien mm-hmm. is based in, but
he's definitely influenced
from
by,
books yeah. to movies to tabletop gaming mm-hmm. to everything. Mm-hmm. Like Tolkien mm-hmm. influences just about every aspect of science fiction, or not science fiction, every aspect of fantasy mm-hmm. writing. Mm-hmm. Our sci-fi and fantasy are one section downstairs, and so yeah, I yeah. always just immediately yeah, am like, science fiction and fantasy.
They go together. There's yeah, a
like
lot of overlap.
How many authors could say they were inspired by Tolkien? Like,
right.
So many.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. and even if you haven't read Tolkien, if you've read anything about dwarves and elves in a fairly modern fantasy setting, not mm-hmm. like mythology and yeah. legends, you're inspired by Tolkien whether mm-hmm. you know it or not.
Yeah.
That's just Tolkien yeah. coming through.
Because his was the first story where elves weren't like Santa elves.
Yeah.
Like they were like tall beings of the forest mm-hmm. and
I do whatever. Love the fact that he never actually mentions anywhere in his books that elves have pointy ears
nope.
and that is just a thing that people have attributed to yeah. it.
And it's wonderful.
And I like too that like it's actually in a letter he wrote somewhere where he's he's like, I never said that elves had pointy ears. I never said. Like,
well,
I never
hey, John,
said.
We did.
We guess decided. What? We said they do, though.
Because it's cool.
Because it's cool.
Yeah.
Well, and then the hobbits have pointy ears because they were described as like elfin or something like that.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And so people were like, oh, they have pointy ears too. And it's like, I never said that.
It makes me. Okay. I had this. Thought, because okay, this is gonna go a little off topic here for a second, then I'm gonna come back around.
us off topic? What?
Couldn't be us.
No.
Never. So there's an author named William Johnstone who writes Western novels.
Yeah.
So much. He's
so
prolific.
So many Western yeah. novels.
So many.
So his daughter, J.A. Johnstone, is writing Western novels now. she is writing them and accrediting them to William Johnstone because...
Okay, so she's writing them, but publishing them under his name?
Under William Johnstone's name. Okay. Yeah, because I don't think he's writing anymore. And I just thought, I think that's interesting because she's like basically like brand recognition. I don't need to like start my life. Yeah. I'm just like, yeah. So all of them say William Johnstone with J.A. Johnstone in the little like thing. Yeah. And so then that made me start. I mean, obviously Tolkien probably wrote a ton of stuff, but I was like, all of the books that are edited by Christopher Tolkien, you know, are they actually edited by Christopher? I don't know. It was just like a theory that was coming up within my head. If he was
he's just like actually making all this stuff up, but he's just like, but no, this was totally this in my totally dad's
in my dad's notes.
I believe so. The Tolkien estate is like fiercely protective of any and all like property rights and everything. Like back in the 50s, 60s, I think the Beatles actually approached, you know this?
I feel like I've heard this.
The Beatles approached the Tolkien estate and they wanted to make like a musical movie of Lord of the Rings where I don't remember who played who, but the four Beatles would play Gandalf, Frodo, Sam, and Gollum. I think Ringo played Gollum or something. I can't remember who was supposed to play who. And Tolkien said, absolutely not. I hate your music. I don't know if he said he hates your music, but he said no.
He said no, I don't enjoy your music.
Yeah, it's like they didn't like... Wait, when did you say the first movie adaptation of it was? In the 70s?
In the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, it took forever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay, yeah.
But, yeah.
You know, money makes the world go round.
Well,
right?
And yeah. I believe, I don't know if the Tolkien estate specifically was involved in it or if it was just mentioned in it, but back in the way back, Games Workshop tried to copyright the term elves and dwarves, like they tried to their armies and stuff. And I believe that the Tolkien estate, I don't know if they got involved, but they were brought up as like, no, Tolkien was the one that first like really had these things published in a specific way. And if they're not trying to stop everyone from using it, then you can't do that either. Which is why now Games Workshop, like Warhammer stuff traditionally is like Slaanesh instead of elves.
Yeah.
And the orcs are ORK instead of ORC. Yeah. And dwarves are spelled very specific for 40K kind of stuff. Yeah. Like
okay.
That also happened with Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. That's why they're called halflings instead of hobbits. Right. Because the Tolkien estate was like, I don't care if they're the same thing. Hobbits is our word.
Yeah.
Because that's like the thing.
Yeah. And that was right. one of the things that they're like, no, you can't use hobbit. That's halfling. Ours. Halfling.
Which is another name used in Tolkien, but it's fine.
Right. Well, and that I believe that like halfling is also mythology based anyway. Yeah. So it would be kind of hard to be like, you can't use that. That's ours. Well, no.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's it. That's all I got for Tolkien.
Any fun closing facts, remarks, statements that you wanted to throw at us? Our resident Tolkien expert?
maybe just that I remembered a thing while we were talking, that the reason that the Ents exist is because Tolkien was so upset with the Shakespeare play Macbeth, because there's a part in it, like in a prophecy, I think, where it says that the trees will walk or something, and it ends up just being people with sticks. And he was so mad, so he's like, well, trees are gonna walk. He made the Ents. And then like the Hurons is what they're called, the trees that move. Like the trees that are like moving and like are alive. Like they're the entire race of quote people, you know, but they're trees, but they're more alive than a normal tree.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, Shakespeare did it wrong. I'm like, okay. Good job, Tolkien. Proud of you.
All right, Tolkien, calm down. It was a weirdly worded prophecy by some really strange one-eyed witches standing around in the middle of the forest, and it was all supposed to be super vague so that Macbeth couldn't fight his destiny and end up exactly where he was supposed to. If they said some weird dudes with shrubs are going to move around outside your building, he would have been looking for weird dudes with shrubs, not walking trees. That's what it is.
That's fair. That's a good defense. That's a great defense. I'm sure Tolkien would say no.
I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. Listen, Shakespeare is not serious writing.
Absolutely.
Shakespeare is nonsense 1,000% of the time. Yes. As someone who loves Shakespeare, nonsense.
What's your favorite Shakespeare play?
Oh, no.
Just really quick.
Othello.
Mine's Hamlet.
Oh, hey. Nice.
I do love Othello, though.
I got to be in a production of Othello, and I enjoyed it immensely.
Was it at the Uptown Theater?
No. It was when I still lived in Spokane.
Okay.
All right. So, we usually end the show with what you're currently reading. Are you currently reading anything?
Yeah, I'm trying to read the book Jedi Survivor Battle Scars, which is like a novel in between the two Star Wars Jedi games. I haven't been able to read it very much lately because, you know, school and work and whatever. But it's pretty good so far.
All right.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. How about you, Hannah?
I just picked up Nothing But Black and Teeth.
Oh.
And I haven't opened it yet because I'm horrified, but I'm so excited to read it.
Okay. That sounds good.
How about you, Sarah?
I am currently reading the book club book, which is called Under the Whispering Door, which is like, it's taking me a little longer to read because it's like, it's a very strange mix of like, it's very cute and like kind of uplifting, almost like rom-com-y, like comedically or whatever. But also the subject matter is like a guy who's a ghost and he's like coming to terms with his own death.
Oh, is that the one that starts out with like where he's at his own funeral?
At his own funeral, and he's like, I think I might be dead. And it's like, it starts out very comedic, but like it's dealing with like a lot of heavy themes. And he's like, has to go to the ferryman who's supposed to help him go like cross over into the other thing, but he's like stuck there now because he doesn't want to go through the door. Anyway, it's like,
there's a movie that like, my friend likes with a very similar premise called A Ghost Story.
Mm.
And like he like has to like watch his family like grieve and whatever, and then his family moves out of the house, but he can't leave, and he watches new people move into his house. It's very sad. I refuse to watch it.
It sounds horrifying.
It's a great movie from what I hear, but I will never watch it.
Speaking of book clubs, do we have book club books for April yet? Or
yes, so Under the Whispering Door is April's book club. We'll be talking about that on the 7th, and then for May it is The Sea of Tranquility by St. John Mandel. I forget her first name.
That's fine.
So that one we will be talking on May 5th.
Okay.
Is the one. And I don't the April book club for YA is the Where Darkness Blooms. And then I don't remember what their May was.
Yeah. Okay. If you are listening to this, you can go onto our website at advunderground.com and you can find our book club selections on our website, or if you're watching on YouTube, I will put up here a picture of the book that we're talking about for book club.
Wonderful.
Insert image.
Through the magic of editing. Yes. This is the one for May. Okay. So yeah. All right. Awesome. Well, this was so much fun.
This was so much fun. Thank you so much.
I'm so glad. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. Yeah. It was awesome. And we're done, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll catch you next time.
Next time.
Thanks
next
for time. Listening to The Word for It.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Word Warren on AU Radio Podcast Network. If you're interested in any of the titles from today's episode, you can check out the link tree in the description to visit Adventure Underground at their online store or their virtual storefronts hosted by bookshop.org and libro.fm. Physical, digital, or audio, Adventures Underground has you covered. If you'd like to contact the show, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Just check out that link tree in the description. Or you can email the show at podcast@advunderground.com. You can also support this show and all the awesome shows on AU Radio that you love by becoming a patron of the AU Radio Podcast Network. You can find us at patreon.com/advunderground. For as little as $1 a month, you can help us continue to create these shows and soon many more.
You've been listening to the AU Radio Podcast Network. Music is provided by CubbyPurplePlanet.com and BenSound.com. Views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Adventures Underground. AU Radio is a production of Adventures Underground. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.